Snack Bar Games Podcast.
Welcome to Snack Bar Games Podcast, episode 240. I am Graham, and this week I am here with Henry, Chris, Sean, and Andrew. Guys, how's it going?
Hey.
Yes. I can't believe we've done 240 of these.
We haven't.
I can't believe that 40. Either. Yeah, it kind of does.
Feels like 2 weeks ago we'd only done 239.
Oh.
Hmm.
I wonder now, why.
Alright. Okay. So, Let's jump into a podcast now. Hey Sean.
Yo.
What's going on in games and stuff?
Oh, games?
Yeah.
Well, in games we have some cat genetics going on with Super Meat Boy.
Oh, I was very confused for a second. He's hey, games, here's this other topic not related to games. Oh wait, this is actually a game. Okay.
Yeah, well, Super Meat Boy people. They like to make weird things.
Yes, Team Meat.
Team Meat. They make weird things. And now they're going to be genetically engineering cats in a game.
In a game.
And they say it's strange.
I feel like they've done this before, but that might just be me.
They've genetically engineered cats?
Yeah, it just wasn't a game.
Peter would have said something.
I missed that part in Indie Game, the movie. I must have been a deleted scene.
Yeah, what version were you watching?
It was on Netflix, I don't know. Version 1.7.
You gotta listen to the commentary tracks, and they'll point out, you see that genetically engineered cat in the background? Actually, there is a genetically engineered cat.
There's technically a genetically engineered cat. I forgot about that. But I don't think they are responsible for it.
See, now I was just having fun, but that's in that movie.
Yeah, it is. We're not joking.
So Teen Meat's next game is going to be that. They're also working on an iOS version of Meat Boy, which is a different game entirely, but they're doing it.
It would have to be. I would think Super Meat Boy on iOS controls would be 10 times harder than on.
Yeah, I think they're doing it one of those things where you don't.
What's
have
10 to. Times infinity?
Yeah, that's right.
Infinity times 10?
10-finity.
Yeah.
I mean, Dark Souls has the Prepare to Die edition for PC, but Super Meat Boy on iOS with touch controls is the Don't Even Bother Trying edition.
Yeah.
Why did you buy this edition?
I mean, you know what?
Yeah, why?
Super Crazy Fox got on there, and that seemed to be all right. If any of you have played Rayman Jungle Run, this is, they're taking a very similar tack to it. Yes, this is, precision platforming, but it's you're not moving exactly like you would in the normal version. Anyway, but that isn't this game. This is a different game, and they haven't really said much about it. And yeah,
what's the title? Is it just
Mugenics?
Mugenics. Okay. Ah, I get it.
It's a game about cats.
Man, I'm getting enough cat puns in the game I'll be talking about later today. But
it will potentially have a two-headed cat as the main character.
Okay.
And I'm sure it will be difficult to play. Or be
possibly.
It'd be really easy to play, just difficult to accomplish anything when you do.
Easy to learn, hard to master?
I was going to say that.
My favorite types of games.
Take that, Chris. I beat you to it.
Oh, that was Andrew.
Take that, Andrew. Your head, Chris. I mean, Andrew.
Okay. Wow. Sean.
Well, on that note, clearly, we are also getting some Anarchy in January.
Yep.
Anarchy Reigns from Platinum Games.
Yep. That game has been done for about 6 months.
Yeah, that game has been done since July, when it was supposed to come out.
Yep.
But it's only $30 now, so I guess it's okay.
Yeah, so I'm excited to play this game. I'm glad it's $30. I feel like this is a good time to talk about Sega and their retail presence. Because they've done some interesting things with downloadables this year. I think they've done, they've done basically what you've wanted out of the company. They've released a lot of stuff in HD that was very good. They've, put down money to, put out Hell Yeah, and they're making The Cave. They're doing some interesting things in that space. In the retail space, they seem to be delaying games and then pricing them at a budget price and then only putting them in certain retailers and then wondering why no one buys them. Because that definitely happened with Rhythm Thief. That definitely happened with Crush 3D.
I didn't realize Rhythm Thief had ever actually come out.
Yeah, that game
came out over the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard about it a lot. There's a
demo in the eShop.
The demo is awesome.
Yeah, it's not a budget title, but it was discounted down to 30 at launch from 40.
That is one of the few 3DS games I really want.
Yep. So they've done stuff like that. They kind of buried Binary Domain and Yakuza Dead Souls, and then decided like 6 months after release that they're gonna like. I don't know if you guys have seen, there's this bundle at Target where you can get both of them for $30. They're still selling each game individually there for $60, but if you want...
I guess maybe they just think one of those games is so bad that you might still want to pay $60 for just for the good one, so you don't have to pay, you don't have to own the bad one. Maybe.
I don't know.
I say this as more of a term of endearment, but Sega just won't go away. They're still here. It boggles my mind. I thought they would have been gone a long time ago, but it seems like at this point, Sega might outlast Sony.
The way you said that made it sound like it was a pest problem. Like, oh, Sega.
No. That's why I said at the beginning. I mean, it's good. I mean, I don't know if there's anyone at this point that can hate Sega. I mean, if you hated Sega back in the day, you owned a Nintendo instead of a Genesis. There was that. But past that, you can't really say
Sonic hates Sega right now.
Sega? Well, yeah,
they keep on destroying him.
Certainly, really, the Creative Assembly isn't too happy with the situation, but
yeah. But they're still kicking. They're still making. They still have jobs. I love it.
Now, I mean, look, they're doing some very interesting things lately. I just think it's interesting that they kind of took that. You know, we have our backs to the wall, creative destruction approach this year, where they're just like, look, we're not going to put a lot of money into retail products. We're going to make some downloadables. We're going to make them interesting. We're going to make some stuff that's just clearly a cash grab. But you know what? It'll be a decent quality cash grab, so it'll be all right.
And then they're going to release our classics as well, or at least some of
our
classics.
They translated and released Monster World 4 this year.
Yeah. How weird is that?
Let's talk about you can't get, well, I mean, look, Valkyria Chronicles 3. But besides that,
I know. I wonder when that would come up.
I was waiting for that because, you know, that's one of those things where, like, come on, you've made worse financial decisions this year than releasing that download only on PSN. Like, come on. Yeah.
Or Shenmue HD or Skies of Arcadia HD. Those would also be good ideas.
That may be coming.
We'll see then.
All right.
Someone needs to mention Sakura Wars so I can fill up my Snack Bar Games podcast bingo.
Well, you know, they didn't localize that either, but they also didn't.
That wasn't the bingo sheet. That was the Sega sheet. When you have to go, Sega.
Oh, yes. This
I missed that.
Hey, if you play Hell Yeah, it does that at the beginning. Yeah. And that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it also does it for a few of the releases this year.
That gave Hell Yeah an extra point on the scale, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was originally a 3 out of 5, but, you know, I saw that logo. I'm like, man.
Just what if they put that logo in 5 times?
Well, I don't think we can go up five more ratings after that.
We can talk about it.
Are we saying we're gonna go above 5?
But I mean, extenuating circumstances.
Okay. For games that have old school logos, they get above a 5.
Yeah, sure. Right.
Okay.
That makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
I'm good with that.
Anyway, but
or, you know, any of these games we just mentioned 10 seconds ago.
Yeah, anyway, Anarchy Reigns finally sort of releasing, maybe.
What type of game is that? Because I have heard the title, but I've never heard anything actually about it.
It's like a multiplayer third-person brawler. Like, think of Mad World, but instead of just killing random people and getting points, you're actually fighting other crazy-powered characters, and you're fighting them online in different arenas and stuff. And I think there's a boss battle with Cthulhu near the end. So,
Cthulhu?
Yeah.
Because what game would not be complete? A boss battle with Cthulhu.
That's what I said. And then this game's coming out, so I'm like, all right.
I gotta say.
Game of the year 2013.
Anyway. All right.
All right. Yeah. Next up is we finally got a title for the new Animal Crossing game. It's called New Leaf, and it will be coming out in the first half of
this year. Yep.
what's the Japanese name on that still? Jump in?
Yeah.
Jump out.
Jump out, yeah. I was close.
Yeah.
Sean, what system is that coming out for? Is that for Wii U?
3DS.
3DS. Yeah. So there was no announcements for the Wii U one. Yeah.
Man, Wii U Animal Crossing. Oh, I don't even know that could be a thing, but I want that really badly now.
It will be a thing.
Yeah.
Of course. I'm going to say 2015.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, actually.
They tend to space them about a year or so.
So
apart.
For someone who skips, you know, every other Animal Crossing release, just skip the 3DS one and wait until 2015. You'll have your...
The handheld ones are really good.
Yeah, well, yep. I mean, yeah, Wild World was okay. I liked it. It was better than City Folk, I think.
Yeah, City Folk,
you know...
Didn't quite get there.
Yeah, at this point in the series, we can't really say, like, the handheld ones are all right, and because there was one.
The handheld one was all right.
Basically, what we're saying is City Folk was kind of a disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
The original Animal Crossing was pretty great.
That's still the best one.
I miss having NES games in my house.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I guess I just have actual NES games in my actual house.
That's not fun.
It's more fun. NES
game. Yeah.
You know, I could put them all on the floor in their own NESs, but they connect. I need to have a TV too, so that's not nearly.
Well, see, you didn't need a TV in the original Animal Crossing. They just played off the NES somehow.
Magic technology.
Right.
So, see, what you could do. What you do is, like, I have this copy of Punch-Out, but and an actual NES to play it on, but I'm just going to pop in my GameCube copy of Animal Crossing, play Punch-Out on there instead, because why not?
Punch-Out isn't in that game.
It isn't?
No.
I swear it was.
Nope.
It was one of those rumored...
Oh, no. Okay.
Very secret things.
I believe the only, like, later life ones were Zelda and Wario's Woods.
Okay, Warriors Woods.
Warriors Woods was definitely there. I don't remember Zelda being there at all. Because that seems like a pain in the ass thing to have a battery save game in that.
Yeah, well, those were the two, I believe, that were like the ones that were hard to find and you had to go to the island. And
right, I did get Warriors Woods that way, though.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there was all those e-card things.
Oh, I had all the e-cards.
I bet you did.
I didn't have all of them.
I still do. They're, yeah. Well, yeah, not all of the Animal Crossing e-cards. That was a collection. Anyway.
Anyway,
yeah,
the one guy who who's played Harvest Moon games has never played that.
Yeah,
so.
I don't understand.
Yeah, you should. Well, just wait for the new one and hopefully it's good.
Yeah, you should play this one. This is a
good... everything I've seen about New Leaf looks amazing.
Yep.
Like, see, you can't farm in it.
If I've never played an Animal Crossing game, why should I play this one? Shouldn't I wait for the Wii U one? Is that one going to be better
in 3 years?
In 3 years. Since I'm 8,000 years old, 3 years is just like a couple of seconds to me.
You're Cthulhu?
Well, yeah, I want to say I should have pumped up Anarchy Reigns more to promote my appearance in it, but yes, I am.
I don't think there's anything that...
I think that we're just brushing that off.
I don't think there's anything that the Wii U version could do that the 3DS version wouldn't. Because it's basically... it would be equivalent to the Scribblenauts from the handhelds.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah,
there won't be like better online functionality with Wii U.
You have the screen in your hand instead of.
They will both also be using, I would assume, the new Nintendo Network.
Right.
Sure.
Which we don't know a ton about right now,
or anything.
Yeah.
And neither do the developers. So.
Right. Are there still friend codes? Do we know that?
It's a network, right? Do we know that much?
We've heard some leaks from EA's Origin documentation that there will be a Nintendo Network ID, which doesn't sound like a friend code.
Good.
That's seriously all the information we have. I've been talking to a couple people at some like the downloadable developers guys, and they're just like,
mm-hmm.
Our game's coming out unless, but we don't know. No one, Nintendo hasn't told us anything about how we're gonna be able to sell our game or
how you buy it
We
want our game to come out, but you know,
yeah,
Nintendo.
Yep.
Nintendo's going to be using Black Magic for their online.
I think
instead of Wi-Fi.
Sure.
They're more focused on getting products to the shelves this winter.
I think it's all going to be based on infrared. So. All right.
It's got to be dialed.
All right. We also got very limited information on Fire Emblem is also coming out at the same time. Yay.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
I like Fire Emblem.
Yeah.
And I thought I heard someone say something about them adding a mode where there's not permadeath.
That's Advance Wars at that point, isn't it?
What? No.
There is.
Well, Advance Wars I'd be fine with.
There is an option in the game to turn off permadeath.
I will not be playing with that, but it's nice to have it there.
Yeah, permadeath wasn't my problem with that game.
I mean, every other game also had an option to turn off permadeath is the reset button.
Well, no, because
that's not how you play
Radiance. I had a lot of walks from the couch to the GameCube. I can't let people die. That's not.
No,
I mean,
I'm sorry. That's war. I'm sorry. You can't press. There's no reset button on war. I'm sorry.
There's no reset there Mass Effect either. Right.
That's why you play it on the game and not in real life.
There you go. Yeah. Now that is one of those games where there are people that have stories, and if they die, you don't get to see the rest of the stories. A game can do permadeath right, XCOM? Like I'd say XCOM. Right. Yeah. Anyway, but yes,
the Fire Emblem Awakening.
Yep. Fire Emblem Awakening looks pretty great.
Yes.
It does.
It's Nintendo's first real dipping into DLC in like a traditional sense. They've been doing some of that new Super Mario Bros. 2 stuff, but that's just like a little extra things for people who really want it.
Characters
and like missions with them usually. It's a lot of content behind DLC, but you know what? Fire Emblem, so I'll buy it.
We need a new Advance Wars.
We do need a new Advance Wars.
I mean, the time is now.
The time is 2009.
I would totally support that.
Yeah.
I would too.
So
none of this Days of Ruin crap. Go back to good old Advance Wars we all know and love.
They can
still have like Days of Ruin, but I would prefer the old one.
I like Days of Ruin too, but it's not.
Right.
About the very first Advance Wars back on the Game Boy Advance, and I remember being fun and different, but like way too tough. And I haven't touched a single Advance Wars game since, but I've heard like every rendition has been pretty solid.
I know why there hasn't been a new Advance Wars from Nintendo of Japan's perspective. And it's that this series has been completely mangled in Japan.
Huh. Oh, really?
Yes. So
we got a series better here than in Japan.
Well, here is what has happened to that series, and it's just kind of crazy. So you know they've always had, you know, there was Famicom Wars and Super Famicom Wars and Game Boy Wars, Game Boy Wars 2, Game Boy Wars 3 before Advance Wars that we got. But when the first Advance Wars was released, they were like, look, we're going to try this in the United States. So they decided to do a simultaneous release, but it was off by a few days, and it was released right before 9/11 in the US. And not at all in Japan, because it was scheduled to be shortly after that, and they didn't think it was a good idea to release a game about war. So then by the time Advance Wars 2 was ready, in Japan they released them both on one cartridge. Yep. So then Dual Strike they did release in Japan, and that one did pretty well. But then with Days of Ruin, it was kind of the worst thing in the world. They made it in Japan. Then they really wanted it out in the US and Europe as fast as possible, so they sent it to both an American and a European localization team. So if you ever see the European version of the game, Dark Conflict, the localization is English, but entirely different. A lot of names are different. A lot of countries are different. It's weird. But the original Japanese version was never released.
It's like somebody forgot.
Yeah, they
version was done first, but yeah, never. That one hasn't been released. So if you're wondering why there hasn't been a new one in Japan, it's that, and that team does Fire Emblem, and Fire Emblem in Japan is the like biggest selling thing behind Animal Crossing. Yep. So that's what's happening.
Interesting.
Yeah. But really, that's the kind of series where it really seemed like that would be like a thing they could put out as like a WiiWare thing, where it was like, look, mainly just war room maps, and then you can play against people online or something like that. Like they didn't need to be a huge campaign. That said, the campaigns are great in that. Yeah, anyway.
I'd be okay with that.
Yeah.
End of Graham story time.
All right. So then next up we have Ratchet & Clank Full Frontal Assault is going to be a crossplay title, and it's $20 on November 27th.
Indeed.
It's only $20 on November 27th. Every other day, it's more expensive. I'm sorry. That's,
yeah.
Or less. I didn't tell you which.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But I think the coolest part of the story is the fact that it's getting a retail release.
Right.
And so, it's crossplay.
That too. But
so, I mean, whereas if you said, hey, this game is releasing for $20 for your PS3, it's downloadable, you'd be like, it's kind of expensive for something that's downloadable and like, and designed as like a smaller experience. But if you say, hey, you can buy this disc at retail for $20.
For $20, yeah.
And it includes a Vita version. Like, yeah, okay. Yeah. That suddenly just puts it in like an entirely different context. And
it's Ratchet & Clank.
Yeah. It is.
I do love Ratchet & Clank. I'm excited for this.
Yeah, the team developing this is the team that did All for One last year. They're taking a more traditional approach this time.
Yes, but with a mix of tower defense, which is pretty neat.
Yeah,
I think.
And vaguely mobile like things. Basically, what they're doing is they're making Fortnite.
Okay.
Basically,
that's okay.
Like, it's Ratchet and Clank during the day, and you collect stuff, and then at night, you use that stuff to build defenses and defend your base.
All right, and it's bringing back online multiplayer to the series, which is cool.
Yeah.
Could that game get any cooler?
It could.
It could be free.
Well, okay.
Does it come with any swag or anything like that? I mean, you get the regular version and the Vita version. Does it come with, I don't know, any kind of...
It comes with a case.
Map, perhaps, or a t-shirt?
Comes with a case
and
possibly
instruction. Are you asking for more? They're
giving
you
a disc, that this game get any cooler.
They're giving you a disc and they're shipping it for the same price. They don't spend any money and you just pay your, bandwidth and download it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Either way, this is good news.
It's pretty good news. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm looking for
a happy news segment. I'm feeling a lot of optimism from this news segment.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Except
I shouldn't have said that.
The other parts that we were talking about.
Well, at least this week. Well, yeah. But I like to think of it as looking, forgetting the past and looking forward, and that's a bright future for Ratchet and Clank.
Yeah. And a bright past for Ratchet and Clank, really. Ratchet and Clank's pretty good all the time.
Yeah.
It's generally always been really good.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Size Matters was not great.
Oh, well, I don't even count that. That's not Ratchet and Clank.
Okay.
That's Clatchet and Rank. That's an entirely different series.
Oh, Ratchet and Dexter somehow. I have no idea how that works.
Okay. Sean, we got anything else?
Last thing we have is that G4 TV has exploded or something.
Yep. It's not literally.
Well,
they're getting rid of all the rest of their meager technology offerings.
Which consists of X-Play and Attack of the Show, basically.
Correct. Now all that will be left is Cops and Cheaters.
And Ninja Warrior.
And Ninja Warrior.
Which is the only reason I still watch G4.
They're going to change the name into GQ, aren't they? Or G...
Something stupid like that.
I heard something like G for Men, but that sounds like a gay porn.
The whole thing is being rebranded in 2013. The whole thing is being rebranded in 2013, so they're just like, yeah, we're just going to cut all ties with any other shows we have.
I know X-Play and Attack of the Show weren't considered sort of good television.
Oh, man. Hey, now.
But I sort of have a soft spot for it because there's not that many shows like that out there, Like,
X-Play.
Them when I have
used to be X-Play used to be pretty incredible. I think so anyway. I grew up with that show. I grew up.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching. I had Adam Sessler in there for a while. Again, there's not that many shows out there like that, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
It is sad.
I mean, the last vestiges of what really were that show were the last two people to leave. So I mean, yes, Morgan Webb was still there, I guess.
Yeah, but like, without Adam, it's not the same.
Yeah. And Kevin Pereira was gone. Like, it's not like the show as it always was still there. So, you know what's a good show? The Electric Playground's pretty good. You seen Electric Playground? That's pretty good.
Is that still on?
Reviews on the Run is pretty good, actually. It's Canadian produced. It's pretty good.
Reviews on the Run, aka Judgment Day in the US. It's still running, still awesome. Of course, they don't have Tommy Tallarico anymore, but,
He's too busy playing Advent Rising songs.
Yes, he's too busy continuing to promote a game that nobody likes, but
hey,
him.
I don't know. The PC version, after they patched it 30 times, was decent.
I will say, Advent Rising is actually not that bad.
But, Tommy yeah. he gets a break from me because Video Games Live is an awesome experience.
Except for the part where you sit and they play Advent Rising.
I don't even remember them playing Advent Rising.
Advent Rising music is great though. You just forget that
I've heard of it. Yeah, it's just like it's decent music, but it's not really video game music because no one played that game, so you know what I'm saying? Like Tommy Tallarico's compositions, you know, live. Like fine, sure. Yeah. But like, hey, remember Abbott, right? Like they're showing like clips of this game on the screen. It's like
I don't think they do that.
Just
that
finished the Zelda medley. Like this is super dumb.
Yeah, I don't think they do that much anymore. I mean, I think they.
I hope not.
But like, I think the past couple of years they've kind of drifted away from that. Yep. I mean, I'm sure every once in a while Tommy's just like, hey, Abbott Rising. Yep. Remember?
Yeah, look, I love that show. I saw it in 2008 and I got the Blu-ray of it when it came out. Like I like it a lot, but yeah, there are certain times where it's like, you know, how about we stop doing the like live Guitar Hero performance just so you can make the orchestra perform a random rock song?
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
How about we Skype Ralph Baer again?
Going back to the shows, I find it confusing that this is happening. I know it's sort of more of a rebrand with the channel, but with games getting more and more popular, and you look at like commentary with StarCraft II games, I would have thought that a show would have sort of risen up from all this instead of the existing shows kind of crumbling down. I wonder if Reviews on the Run will last a long time, but I hope that it would. I would think with more people interested, they're going to look for regular, you know, 22-minute shows that'll review games with personalities.
Well, to be fair, you're in Canada and we don't get Reviews on the Run. We haven't gotten that since 2006.
Oh, I feel sorry for you guys. It's usually us who can't access your content, like Hulu. We can't do Hulu. We can't do any like self-embedded player like Comedy Central or anything like that.
I think the G4 TV in Canada is like a kind of different thing entirely. I mean, I don't know if that's going to be affected at all, but like, who knows? But I know there should be something
like that. I don't think it's an outdated. I don't think the concept of personalities on TV.
Well, I think outdated. I think people who are really into games are also tech savvy, and as such, web TV makes a lot of sense.
Exactly.
Yeah,
fair enough.
I think. You know, there's some good people out there making some good content.
So what you're saying, Graham, is that we should be the ones to make the new show.
Okay.
Snack Bar TV.
Let's look at our budget for some HD cameras.
Sure. Studio. I'm going to need a lot of bagels.
Okay. Kickstarter this thing.
Is that the part where I step in and tell you guys we have zero budget and then I crush all your hopes and dreams?
Yes, no, that's exactly what that happens.
I feel like you covered that in mid-2007.
Someone has Chris.
But...
I'm glad it's you.
All right, I'm just making sure I'm playing the right role here.
I've got my own food budget, so I'll go get a bagel later. But as for the stupid HD cameras, we may need to save up for that.
Kickstarter.
Chris, start up the Kickstarter.
Out of bagels.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and create a Kickstarter campaign later. We're going to have a target budget of $10 million,
okay.
And we will deliver our own TV network. Yeah. Sound good? Everybody on board with that?
I mean, I thought we could just go one show, you know, and it'd be about video games and bagels.
Yeah.
And we can call it snack time.
But we still want to raise $10 million, right?
Yeah. Wow. Make this guy in charge of the site. This guy knows what he's talking about.
He should be an editor or something.
Yeah.
I think there's something that goes along with that.
He should do more work. Oh, wait. He can't possibly do more work.
Anyway, on that note,
bagels,
I don't. Yeah, bagels. bagels—they seem all right. I don't know.
Anybody else really hungry right now?
I want to know more about them.
I would prefer some scones.
You know, maybe if I, you know, explore the world of bagels in some sort of
the world of bagels
video format.
I'll bring you guys some donuts from Tim Hortons. You guys don't have those down there, I don't think. So you'll be appreciative of the Canadian cuisine one way or another.
Appreciative of anything you want to bring from Canada to my house.
Even me?
Cool.
Apparently not.
Awkward silence.
In closing, rest in peace, X-Play, and Attack of the Show.
Yeah,
I will miss
whatever, them. Rest.
Yeah, just rest.
I mean, you probably have better paying jobs with, you know, I don't know.
Anyone else?
Spike or Revision 3 or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. There are places you can do video game content.
I mean, Kevin Kerr and Adam Sessler are on some dumb sci-fi show right now, so I don't know how much better that is, but you know,
yeah.
They're still TV.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're on some TVs.
I think at least this show is admittedly dumb.
Oh yeah.
So there you go. It's fine.
They accept it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
No. John, we got anything else?
Nope.
Okay, well, let's move on.
Yay. All right.
Games.
Excellent. Yes. Time to talk about video games, boys. Strap yourselves
games.
In. I'm going to be a very bumpy ride, and I'm sorry to say that this might be the most awful part of the podcast, because Graham.
What?
I need you to tell me the truth.
Okay.
Have you been playing some video games lately?
Do-do-do-do.
Graham, be honest with us. Have you been? You have! Wonderful!
You pressed me. You got it.
Oh, I thought this was going to be the first part, and you were going to say you haven't played any games lately. Graham, what games have you been playing?
So, as all of you know, as of last podcast, I was playing every recently released and soon to be released game on the planet.
Everyone.
And for about
all
six,
of them.
6 minutes, which is the best way to play all of them.
So, Graham.
But
Graham,
so
how,
I took.
How was,
yeah.
How was Farming Simulator 2013?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Continue. I'm sorry.
Okay. But yeah. So, it's been interesting to come back and play one game for like more than 6 minutes and be able to sit down sometimes when you do it. It's been an adjustment period.
Mm-hmm.
But so I have been playing a little Vita game called Orgarithm. Yes.
I like saying that. Orgarithm.
Okay, say it a few more times. It's fine.
Orgarithm.
Okay.
Orgarithm?
One more time.
Orgarithm.
If you say it anymore, it's going to stop sounding like a word.
If you say it anymore,
it's not a word. So
I'm more worried that an ogre is going to show up in Andrew's house and eat him.
I think it's better than theater rhythm, personally.
It's because it's not a... It's theater rhythm.
Yes.
No, it's theater rhythm.
Yes.
But tell us about Orgarithm then.
Okay, so imagine that you are dreaming about a game that is half Patapon and half Pikmin.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, that was a nightmare.
Okay.
Now that you have that idea in your head, imagine that you are woken up by someone hitting you in the head with a blunt object that made you forget about what buttons are.
Oh God!
So now, game do you have in your head now? It's Orgarithm. That's the game.
Pikmin Connect. Oh wait, what?
close.
More like Pikmin iOS.
Oh
God, that's actually worse.
Well, yeah. Okay. So basically, this game is on rails. It's like on rails Pikmin. Basically, You are this god of light, and you go around these areas. But it just takes you around these areas, basically. And as you go, you tap to the beat to select one of three different colors of armies, and then select what you want them to do, and then like drag over the area where you want them to go do that. So there are red, blue, and yellow, you know, followers, units, what have you. And that they can do like close combat fighting, which does the most damage. They can do ranged attacks that can go over obstacles, and they can set up catapults to hit high things and to also do a lot of damage over a very slow period to one area. So as you go through there, the other enemies are also red, yellow, and blue. And what happens is red units are good against yellow, yellow units are good against blue, and blue units are good against red. Surprise! So you just have to do this, and like each level is basically a song, and songs are all right. They're interesting, but yeah, it's not a specific rhythm that you have to tap, but you have to tap on the rhythm. So it's this thing of like, I can absolutely hit the beat if I take it like every other beat, but then what if I need to do it faster? You know, what if I need to get it's a weird give and take, because if you mess up one, if you get it correct in like a number of times in a row, then your units get stronger. If you miss once, they go all the way back.
Yeah.
So it's kind of brutal. But I don't know. There are some interesting things that it does. There is nothing like this game, to be sure.
I was going to say, a rhythm RTS on Rails, that sounds like the most unlikely combination of genres since Okami. Oh, not Okami.
Are you sure?
Odama.
Yeah, I was going to say. Okami makes sense.
I get this too confused all the time, and I really shouldn't.
Opuna. Yeah.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, there you go. It's kind of, this game isn't like that game.
Oh.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's kind of strange because it's level-based, and it's kind of a score attack game. But then also, like, it's super brutal to clear the level at all. And it kind of does that, like, beat your head up against the wall until you figure out exactly the right strategy thing. Where, like, if you don't do the right strategy, you're not going to win. Like, it's not, oh, I can just keep going. No, you need to, you know, send the right units to the right places at the right times. I don't know. It's super weird. And, you know, XE brought it over. And I appreciate them doing that. Super weird. It's not an incredibly long game, but I mean, it sticks around for about 4 or 5 hours, which is not bad, you know, mm-hmm. and you can replay stuff if you really like leaderboards. But I don't know. This game is strange. Yeah.
Can you recommend it to anyone?
No.
No?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Correct. I cannot recommend it to anyone.
Okay.
It's the best game I can't recommend to anyone.
Man.
All
right.
Okay, so question for you, Graham. Would you recommend it over NBA Baller Beats?
No. That game I would absolutely recommend to fans of basketball, rhythm, and the Kinect. It's a very small group of people, but those people will love it. It's a pretty good game.
And also have the ability to actually play that without knowing anyone. Don't forget that part.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay.
But no, the thing about the game is that it takes about, it took me about 4 hours to get the touch controls working the way I wanted them to adjust myself to what it wanted me to do when I wanted.
And you just said it was a 5 hour game, so that's like an hour of actually really enjoying it, maybe?
Yes.
Okay. That doesn't sound very pleasant.
Maybe 2 hours. Like, and then the problem is, if you really get into it and really get that rhythm going, it's really cool. It's a really cool game. But then you keep going, and it's not like a super long, super deep game. If it were a longer game, I could recommend it to those people. If the control scheme clicked a little earlier, I could recommend it to people who just want to try out something quirky. But, you know, it's one of those things where you should look at some videos of it and say, if you say, like, this is weird, I want to have experienced this, that is valid.
Okay.
It's just a matter of how much patience you have, I'll say. But it's not a bad game. They tried a lot of things. You know? Acquire does interesting things, always. And
you gotta appreciate honestly, a company that takes risks instead of just doing the cookie cutter.
Yeah. Well, copycat we've seen
all
a lot
time.
Of weird things. And I think we'll continue to see Acquire do some very strange things. Their last Vita game, Andrew, you reviewed that one for us.
What was that?
Sumikuni.
That was not so much weird as it was just bad, but yeah, I get what you're saying. It was okay. Well, maybe it was a bad in a weird way. I don't know.
Yeah, it tried things and
it tried things. Yes.
So anyway, this game, yeah, I worry that because this game doesn't have any button controls and isn't like the most visually striking game, it's going to be one of those things where people aren't going to want to pay $30 for it on a Vita.
Yeah, I don't. Like, based on your description, it doesn't sound like a
$30 game, you know. But you know what? It's interesting. I like when people try things, and this isn't a complete failure. So it's a game.
Back of the box. Order rhythm. Okay. Not a complete failure.
Great, Graham. Did you have any other games you wanted to talk about, or should we? Mosey on.
I mean, unless you guys want me to delve into the craziness that was New York Comic Con, then
I would just say everyone go read all of the previews so far. They're good, and
I'm still writing.
Still writing them, so they're more to come.
Help me.
It's a good thing you got it out of New York now, or when you did instead of now.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, like, look, if they had shut it down when I was in the Javits Center, and I was just like, you're in the Javits Center for the next week. All right, maybe I'll have time to play some of these games.
Ah, fair enough.
But with my luck, it would be like, well, sorry, we took everything but Lost Planet 3.
Oh, jeez.
So you can play Lost Planet 3 again.
I'm so sorry.
Dude, guys, that game's not great.
Well, after the smash hit that was Lost Planet 2, I am shocked.
Yeah, well, and they gave it to such an illustrious developer, Sparks.
I know.
Yeah.
I know, Sparks Unlimited doesn't make anything but great stuff.
Yeah, well, Sparks Unlimited makes some great stuff. Yeah. On the other hand, makes Legendary, The Box, and Turning Point, Fall of Liberty. Yeah.
Classics.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so yeah.
All right, let's move on. Thank you, Graham. Sean.
What?
You old salty sea dog. What adventures have you been having on the seven seas?
Talk! Well,
I definitely haven't been killing children in convents.
Whoa.
That's a strangely suspicious denial.
And it definitely wasn't on purpose.
We didn't bring that up. You brought that up. Now it's, I mean, it wasn't suspicious before, but it is now.
See, the point was this was a fake gag. We weren't actually interrogating you, but now we're going to call the cops, and they're going to really interrogate you, so I'm sorry, Sean. You just can't go on any longer.
No, I blame the Mother Superior. Oh. It's her fault.
Okay.
Turn me into a serial killer.
Well, aside from your extracurricular activities, what have you been up to this last week or so?
I have been playing Ed, Ned, and Harvey, Harvey's New Eyes on Steam.
That sounds made up.
It does. It's just absolutely fictitious.
It is made up.
You have to play the game, but just say so and we can move on. That sounds completely fictional.
That it is. It's not.
It's not real.
Not real.
It's not a real game.
It's a video game.
Oh.
Yes. And so are the children. The children are fake also.
Oh, it's all coming together now. Sean, have you perhaps been doing mean things to children in a video game instead of real life?
That's his story, and he's sticking to it.
He's touching his nose right now, but we can't see, so I'll
but still, none of it was intentional. I was just trying to help them.
So tell us about the game itself that doesn't involve hurting children, unless that's the whole point of the game.
Germans made it, so.
Oh, okay, all right.
That was
And you actually get to hear the theme song in German at one point too. It's kind of interesting.
They make good games. I shouldn't talk about.
They make good games, yeah.
Shouldn't talk about their human abuse.
Oh.
So, anyway, Harvey's New Eyes is about it's about a little girl named Lily, who is in a convent.
Wait a minute. So Edna and Harvey, Harvey's New Eyes is about a little girl named Lily. Are you sure you're not making this up as you're going on?
I am absolutely sure.
Okay.
Edna is Lily's best friend.
Okay. Aww. Wait. I thought Edna would be like Harvey's best friend.
No.
Oh.
Edna doesn't even know who Harvey is.
Who is Harvey? We don't know who he is.
He's an invisible rabbit?
Oh.
No, yeah. He is an invisible rabbit, yes.
I'm lost.
Seriously.
Is this a game that I should be interested in?
Yeah. Okay.
Do you like point and click adventure games?
I do.
Then you'll probably like this because it's very strange and it's a point and click adventure game.
Yeah. So
it just doesn't sound very fun.
So Sean, this is from Daedalic, the developers of Deponia and the upcoming Chaos on Deponia, which is also a Deponia game. The first Deponia game came out in the United States like couple this months year. Ago and then yeah. the new
yep.
ones come out next month
too.
But this came out in between those.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm glad.
Yeah.
Because
what is this one like? I from what I saw of it, it was very very creepy in a way. Like Tim Burton
kind of
creepy.
Basically, Lily is a disturbed young girl.
Okay.
Who is very nice and innocent but accidentally kills people.
I hate that ass.
But she doesn't know that.
Hold
she
up.
Doesn't
does
realize
she kill he's... Edna?
No.
Okay, does she kill Harvey?
Spoilers.
I'm not telling you spoilers.
Is she responsible for Harvey needing new eyes? Like, did she mess up Harvey's old eyes?
No, she did not.
Okay. I still don't get the name thing.
She accidentally kills people. She doesn't realize it, though. She thinks they're just gone.
Okay.
They're being painted in pink with binomes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't know that they're dead. She just thinks they disappeared.
Okay.
Does
she leave origami figures? Or sorry, figures. Origami figures. When she kills people.
No. You mean origami?
Origami figures.
Okay.
She does not.
Okay.
So the Mother Superior, because she does not like Lily.
Mother Superior is neither Lily nor Edna, and also not Harvey.
No, character. She that is her name in the game.
At some point we're gonna get to Harvey, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Brings in this guy to hypnotize Lily.
So that's not Harvey
doing
either.
Bad things. He uses Harvey to do it.
Okay.
And Harvey's new eyes. Harvey's new eyes are hypnotic.
Okay.
Oh. Okay.
And once you're hypnotized, you can't do things that they tell you not to do, like play with fire or disobey adults or lie or get angry. And in order to progress through the game, you basically have to, one by one, figure out ways of getting through those blocks that they put in you hypnotically.
Hmm. You know what?
Interesting.
That sounds interesting. That sounds like a better puzzle-solving mechanic than, you know, click, 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 click. Oh, okay, I can pick this thing up. Click, click, click.
Well, the best thing about it was you click spacebar and it shows you everything you can interact with on a screen.
I like
that's
that.
Always,
it's been in a lot of newer games. And yeah,
so
like,
it's not a Where's Waldo game with my mouse.
No. I mean, you can make it that way, but...
As long as you haven't lost your mouse.
And then it's a game of
maybe
find
it's in
the
like
mouse,
a box with like cords in it and stuff. I don't know.
To be fair, at least most Weird Waldo game with a mouse will at least have a changing cursor. But I've played some that don't. And that's just pixel hunting.
Those are the worst. It's
those
usually
are the worst.
And usually those are like SMB games.
Not the worst.
Not the worst. What's nice is that the biggest problem I had with Deponia was that some of the puzzles and logic things that they expect you to do were completely ridiculous and you would never ever do any of it without a walkthrough.
This doesn't have that problem?
No. They did a much better job of making it so that you understand what you're supposed to do and where you're supposed to go without telling you.
That's good. That's always a good thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is good. I remember playing the last point and click adventure I played was about 5 years ago. I tried out The Longest Journey because I'd heard really good things about it. And
I need to get you
without,
on some point.
Without a guide, I don't know how people would beat that game. I found the clues, and like when I would like look online and figure out what to do because I'd get stuck, I would just be like, I could never have figured that out. It seems so complicated to me. Maybe it was because I'm terrible at the point and click games, but I wanted to get into it, but it just seemed daunting to me.
It's, well, there are some great ones, especially in the last 5 years.
May I recommend Gemini Rue?
I already have downloaded Gemini Rue because I hear it's amazing.
May I recommend Edna and Harvey? Harvey's new ops.
Yes. You may not.
Right.
I will recommend it, though.
There we go.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some very convoluted and complex puzzles in it that take multiple steps to figure out, but you always have you always know what it is you're needing to find to figure that out.
Okay, before we move on, who's Edna? You didn't like what role does Edna play?
She's Lily's best friend.
Right. How does she get title billing? What?
Yeah. What does she do in the game besides be someone's best friend?
Yeah.
A lot of the things that Lily is trying to do at first is to protect Edna from the doctor that came.
Okay. Okay. Fine.
And anything else?
I don't understand why Lily isn't in the title or the doctor.
Hey. Link's almost never been in the title of Legend of Zelda games, so.
Yes.
Well.
Like twice.
Samus has never been in the title of her games, has she?
I mean.
No.
Luigi's never in the title.
Oh, wait, no. Return of Samus was Metroid 2.
Oh, you're right. Metroid 2. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. You're right.
It really depends how you interpret some of those puns in the Zelda titles, whether Link is in the name.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Anyway.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Sean, for your incredibly weird and made-up recommendation of a game that you say exists. Andrew,
Hello.
My good friend.
Hi there.
Andrew, my long, long-time nemesis.
Whoa. I didn't know about this, but okay.
That's an awfully genial tone.
Well, to be fair,
Andrew,
I have
the man who murdered my family and stole my wife on my wedding day.
Is that how you became?
I'm so interested as to what you've been playing the last few weeks.
Is that how you became Bakufu? Is that what happened? Is this your backstory?
A lot of dark times.
All right.
All right, Andrew, what have you been playing, man?
I've been playing another strange Vita game. This one is called Dokuro, and it is a puzzle. What? Yep.
Gung Ho. A game with a real title. Anyway.
This is a real game with a real.
All right.
It's not as cool. The title isn't as cool as Orgorhythm, which
it's,
just you know.
Well,
it sounds made up too, though.
How you define cool?
I you know what? It's in my it's my definition of cool, and it's Orgorhythm.
Oh, okay. That's Fox, but.
Yeah. My definition of cool. All right, so Dokuro is a puzzle platformer that involves. It's basically okay. Bear with me here. This is gonna sound awful. It kind of is.
You're really hyping this up, Andrew. You sure you can deliver?
Honestly.
Maybe you should have gone with killing children in a convent.
you'll think that's possible for this. This game is essentially, now, hear me out. This game is essentially one long escort mission.
Oh, jeez.
I know.
Wow.
You are not making me want to play this.
You are not kidding.
No, no way. But, okay.
Well, hang on. Eco was an escort mission.
I didn't like that game. Shock and all. But anyway, okay. I don't like escort missions.
Banjo-Kazooie was an escort mission.
Oh, was it?
Which one was being escorted?
It's like a philosophical thing. Who is escorting who?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, if you think about it, those parts where you control Kazooie and you walk around with Kazooie's legs and that
fine.
You know. So I could. Yeah.
Dokuro.
Oh, you say it much cooler than me.
I say it in Japanese.
Enslaved was also an escort mission.
Yes,
Enslaved. Okay, we can't talk about that. I'm going to talk about it for an hour. Andrew, talk not about Enslaved.
All right. So the game that Graham just said, I'm not going to say it anymore because he says that game. So so it's one long escort mission. But the good news is that the princess you're trying to escort, you're basically trying to save her from this evil demon thing. They don't really explain what he
that
is.
You work for.
Oh, is he Dokuro?
You work for the demon, but then you get fed up because he doesn't see you. He doesn't like you. And he's just...
Because you're a skeleton, and that's probably correct.
Yes, you are a skeleton, and nobody can see you. Although you still work for the demon, so I don't...
Don't worry about it.
Okay, so anyway, so basically you're trying to save the princess just to get back at the demon because, you know, he doesn't like you and can't see you. But the princess can't see you either, so that's the bad thing. So, you know. But the good news is...
How does she follow you?
Well, she doesn't. She just walks on her own path. But,
yeah, so it's kind of like one person lemmings.
Yes, it is one person lemmings. It is one person. She does not walk on a path that she cannot walk on. So if there's even like a tiny ledge, she will not walk down the ledge or up a ledge. So there are many, many, many points during every one of the puzzles where the princess will just stop and you'll be able to leave her behind and focus on the like kind of creating a path for her. So that's the good news. She never really gets in danger on her own. Unless you are not careful, and whenever she dies, it's usually your fault. So that's the good news.
Are there any like timed elements that you have to dodge? Like she's walking towards him, you have to stop them at a specific time, or can you like set up her path and let her move on to the next room?
So here's one feature of the game is you get this potion early on that transforms you into this prince, and she can see the prince, and you can carry her as the prince. So there are puzzles that involve you having to carry her. Because she moves too slow on her own to avoid like certain obstacles. So there are times when you definitely do need to actually directly involved with her movement because you're carrying her through different areas and stuff. And those are generally okay. They work about as well as they can. But the problem with that is the actual transformation mechanic works on either the press of the right trigger. Are the right bumper on the Vita or the touchscreen, which is defaulted to as the touchscreen. You got to double tap the touchscreen, which before I realized you could change to the right bumper, it was really annoying because double tapping the touchscreen, when you're trying to do it quickly, because some of the levels require some expert precision in terms of having to transform and transform back to the skeleton and stuff, is really, really, really tricky because sometimes the Vita just does not register the double tap.
Right, and there's no reason for that to be a touchscreen tap.
Yes, exactly.
Just straight up none.
And then to transform back, you have to double tap the back screen. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense.
Has anything ever used that back screen accurately?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Little Big Planet for the Vita does a really good job.
Katamari's so okay. Katamari. There's two.
Katamari's all right. Sound Shapes used it for scaling, so it was just relative position of two fingers, and that worked fine. Anyway, yeah. So, I mean, if you use it correctly, which no one ever does, that's great.
Yeah. But you can. So here's the good news: you can map it to the right bumper, and of course, the transformation all happens
buttons.
On one button. Yes, yeah. actual buttons, which is
good.
Whoa. But the problem is that even with the right bumper, it can be a little frustrating because sometimes it just won't be registered. Like you hit the button, it just doesn't. Sometimes it just doesn't work. It's like the game forgets. Hey, you mapped it to the right button. This didn't happen that often, but it did happen at the worst moments, making me really frustrated.
Yeah.
So there's that. But
so it only works when you don't need it to.
Yes, it only works when you really don't need it to. But I played through most of the game. I still haven't finished it because it's a really this is like the opposite of Orgorithm. It's like 10 hours long as far as, and I think I'm like 7 or 8 hours into it. And the later puzzles are ridiculously tough. So there's
ten.
That. What's that?
10. Is that all?
I think it could go on for longer. Again, this is just what I've heard. I've only put like 8 hours into it.
Yeah. But Chris doesn't play action games.
So he doesn't understand that 6 hours is like minimum length for games these days.
All right.
But anyway, so the big hook is that you can also draw lines on the screen, which is like this magical chalk, which you use this to connect like parts of the environment to other things. Like there's a chain and a box, and you need to connect the chain to the box, and then you swing it, and you can use that as a way to get the princess across an area, for example. And there are other things, there are other different kinds of chalk. One that will let you like move let's say there's a pool, and you can draw a line to raise the water, which if there are boxes in the water, you can use that to cross the water.
Let's be clear, you are drawing a line with chalk, and then that is supporting the weight of an entire human.
Yes, it is magic chalk.
Okay, but then never mind.
Magical chalk. And then, of course, there's chalk, which lets you, like, move fire from one place to another to start fuses and stuff for explosions. Like, there are explosive barrels you need to get rid of so the princess doesn't get hurt by them, or they need to be blown up to destroy an obstacle in the way, things like that. So a lot of those mechanics work fine. That's where the touchscreen works really well. But the problem is, again, there are these puzzles that involve such precision that the touchscreen it's just not possible, because you need to be able to draw this line quickly enough while also trying to navigate this one area to not die or get the princess killed. And some of the puzzles can be really tough, and they just seem unfair at times because of the Vita itself, basically. But there's really no way to get around that, because drawing a line any other way wouldn't have worked. So this mechanic, which works when it works really well, but when it doesn't work, it is the worst thing. So, but besides that, if you can overcome those little problems, it is a really fun puzzle game that just has some like small issues that kind of become the worst things ever right in the middle of some of these tough puzzles. So,
and you know, it seems like a really strong start for Gung-Ho in the United States. This is the first one they're publishing here. The company's being led by the guy who used to run XSEED.
Yes.
And since XSEED is now run by the guy who used to run Atlas.
Yep. Everyone knows everyone.
Well, yeah. But
wait, who's running Atlas?
No.
Yeah. it's interesting to see that they're doing these things now. Like a lot of the stuff we've been talking about that XSEED's been publishing, those were Gung-Ho properties in Japan. All the Acquire stuff and
So
we'll probably see a lot more from them. You know, those sort of games will be, but I think Dokuro is a really strong first game to release. Like, especially like looking back at publishers who started even XSEED when they started. Wild Arms roughly.
Wild Arms 4 was their first big one, and then they moved on to Shadow Hearts, which was a bit better. But,
They did all right, but like Anyway.
But yeah, I would say unlike Orgorithm, which you know Graham doesn't recommend, I can recommend.
I recommend to no one in particular.
Okay, well I can recommend Dokuro to people who really like puzzle platforms and can kind of overcome those touchscreen problems.
Really, it's kind of at this point, if you have a Vita, it's one of those experimental things. You know, you can put it in the group with like Escape Plan and.
Yeah.
Like it's you wanted something weird, not necessarily the best thing, but a new different thing. This is good enough.
Yeah. And it'll last you a while. So there's one thing I do really like about it is the art style too, and I think
it's pretty
is really cool looking game. So it looks nice on the screen. One thing I will say negative is that the music is awful, and it's every level has like different sections, and you will hear the same song on loop for the entire level. And these levels can last from a half an hour to 2 hours. So I recommend turning off the music. Which if I ever have to recommend someone turn off the music in the game, I am really sad because I love game music, but yeah, good stuff overall. Yeah. I think
we can keep it on for like the first minute.
Yes, keep it on. You probably will keep it on at first, and then after a while, you will be like me and be like, I'm just gonna mute this and then listen to other music.
Yeah,
listening to ActRaiser music. That was really good and complimentary towards.
There you go. Yeah.
So yeah.
Okay. So
splendid.
Yeah.
It looks like next up, Ingersoll.
Is this Cthulhu talking now?
Yeah, are we still doing this like interrogation thing? Or is this Cthulhu?
No, we're just having fun.
He realized that he couldn't just say Chris because then we'd get confused.
Yeah, note that I did not.
Ingersoll,
what have you been up to?
I have been reading Zero Escape Virtue's Last Reward on the 3DS.
What? Hey, this is not a podcast. Get out of here with your books.
Yeah, what are you doing with your book learnings?
Yeah. Visual novels are weird.
Well, hang on. I didn't know you could read books on the 3DS. That's interesting.
You probably can, but this is a visual novel.
Visual novel.
Just like this is the sequel to 999, which came out a little over 2 years ago. November of 2010. So yeah,
Was about like a hotel mystery or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. the actual details are so mind blowing. I would kill the entire podcast to try to explain it right now.
I heard it was really cool.
Well, it was very Cthulhu cool. Cthulhu is currently on the podcast, so maybe it's acceptable losses to take out the rest of us if you can take out Cthulhu in one shot with mind boggling. Yes.
I've been trying for years, but I can never do it. This might be our opportunity.
Was very cool, but
nope.
The genre of virtual novel might imply a ton of reading in 999. And there is also a ton of reading in VLR. But the good news is that, with the exception of the main character's internal monologues anytime he's speaking for some reason, everything else is voiced. It's voiced really well, too. This game is a joy just to let play and listen to like the characters, and the writing is brilliant in it. So it's funny.
With a game like this, that's a must.
I mean,
if it was substandard or, I mean, excruciating to listen to the voice actors, you turn it off in about 5 minutes.
Right. I mean, 999 was a lot of reading, but it was only 5 endings, and I blew through that in the month of space of a weekend because I had nothing better to do that. Virtue's Last Reward. I have so far seen 6 actual endings. About a dozen dead ends, and I still have 3 more real endings to go at least, and I have 30 hours on this game already since Tuesday.
That's a lot of reading.
And the best part is, since you have to replay a lot, but this system, where the original 999, you had to go back to the beginning every damn time, and you could skip through all the text that you've seen before, but if it changed even slightly, you have to read parts of it, but you still have to go through all the actual gameplay part of the game. That's not choose your own adventure a bit, is, like the Escape the Room Flash games. Like you're walking,
you
have to solve all kinds of weird logic puzzles to get out. So there's a bunch of these scattered around. That's the gameplay. But you never have to do those more than once here. Because the way the time travel type works is they give you a flowchart. And every time there was a choice to do it.
Flowcharts!
Which door you want to go through or how you want to vote in the Ambidex game, which I'll get to in a second. Like path branches. And you can go back to any one of those points and continue right there.
That's kind of like Radiant Historia?
It's very much like Radiant Historia, except I think I can choose anything and not just specific nodes.
Right, okay.
But, I have to. And also, there's an option. The 99 had an option where you hold down the L button and you skip through all the text you've seen before. On VLR, there's a standard version for how the text advances. Like, it'll stop at certain points. You can advance it manually. There's an autoplay where it'll just keep going, like in more or less real time. It gives you more time to read the stuff that's just text, but I read way faster than that, so it's kind of slow for me. I'm not sure if that's going to apply to everybody who would play this.
But when you're going through sections you played before, when you're in autoplay, you can hit it again and enter skip mode, which is just press once, fast forward until further notice, or until you need to stop fast forwarding, because I haven't seen this stuff yet. That's much better than holding down the L button, just grinding through text and hours and hours and hours of text.
Right.
But the puzzles in this are really good, and I've never once had like the point-and-click adventure moon logic that some of these games could fall prey into. Everything has been coherent and makes sense in the context. There are two difficulty levels on the game. There's the defaults to hard, where your companions don't help you as much as they did in the first game, but you can turn it on to easy, and they will start chiming in when they realize that you're just clicking on a bunch of things aimlessly. It's like, I don't know what to do.
That's good, at least.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I do have a question. I have heard, again, I haven't played this game, but I've heard that the 3DS version is currently suffering from a really nasty bug that will completely delete your save.
I've heard that there's a save corrupting bug in it, one specific room.
In one room?
If you're in the middle of doing the pressure equalizing chamber room, the PEC room, I'm told, not save while you're in the middle of that puzzle.
All right.
Other than that, I haven't heard of any issues.
Okay, that's good, at least.
I had just finished that room and I heard about it too, but I going through in such marathon sessions. It's like, save? What? And again, there's really no need to save unless you're ending the session for, like, you have to go to work or whatever. Because even if you screw up, the game will, like, you reach a game over or whatever, and then it's like, save, okay, and then go back to wherever the hell you want to go. So you can't lock yourself out of a solution or anything.
Okay.
It's not a paranoid save. It's just, all right, I need to turn off my system save.
Yeah. Okay. So don't do that in that specific
room, and you should be fine.
Hopefully they patch that, because 3DS games have been getting patches a lot lately, or fairly recently anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I should be done with it, but I'm still powering through this. I'll finish it tonight so I can pick up the new Leighton game.
Yeah. One thing to note, since we're talking a lot about Vita games today, that game's also on the Vita, so.
Yes.
So,
interesting. And since the gameplay is not reliant on any technology.
Right.
You're probably all right.
The two screens may be a little bit better on the 3DS version for when you can access. They gave you like a two-page notepad that you can constantly rewrite on like the Leighton games have, which is an awesome feature that I wish the first one had, so you didn't have to take actual physical notes. It's also, like, when you find passwords or, like, certain things on the wall you may want to reference as an archive mode, I guess, like, your main characters are some sort of photographic memory, which is coming in extremely handy. Sometimes in the game, he will rattle off, he literally just did this in one of the things I was in, a 25-digit number that he saw once.
Sure, why not?
Perfect. Boom, I've got it. It just came to me. But the so far, in addition to the brilliant writing and the voice acting, the story on this one blows 999s out of the water so far, and 999s was really good.
So you're saying it was in the water, that game?
The water leak was a plot element, yes.
Okay. But this one's not in the water.
It uses a lot of weird, like, metaphysical pseudoscience. Like, the first one was all about morphogenic fields and, like, being acted as, like, a group memory.
As opposed this to one just pedestrian metaphysical pseudoscience.
Right. Well, this one takes that concept and just runs with it crazy ways.
Cool.
I do have one last question. I've been asking this for a lot of people, but would you say that playing 999 is required before playing?
Yes. Okay. Under no circumstances should you play this unless you can find it. Well, I mean, you can do it. It'll spoil things in 999 for you a little bit, and nothing blatant, really, but there are one of the characters in the Nonary game is one of the characters from 999, and another character was kind of a cameo appearance in the first one, and they will refer back to it a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
You talk to them.
It's a book. You can read the second book. You should probably read the first book first, because it's a book.
It's not so much a direct sequel as it is kind of a minor, like, not a full spinoff, but like a little bit spinoff. But there's one other thing I did want to mention. I mentioned the Ambidex game, and that's kind of where the first one was all about figuring out numbers. Like, it was all based on the Nonary games, just on nines. This one is using colors, and it's basically all done for you. So the real test in this one is the Ambidex game, which is all better known as the Prisoner's Dilemma, if you're familiar with that logic exercise.
Yeah.
And the choice to ally or betray is one of the major branch points in the flowchart of time, and it is the very first thing the game asks you, like in the little startup intro, is why do people betray each other? And this game will explore that in really interesting, deep ways.
Hmm. Yeah, Andrew. Why you gotta betray Henry? Slash Cthulhu.
Andrew, maybe you learned something this podcast, Andrew.
I guess I need to play Virtue Slash Reward to learn a little more about betrayal.
Why you gotta betray Cthulhu, man? Why?
Man, nice isn't if you think about it, isn't Cthulhu always just betraying everyone else?
not intentionally, it just happens around.
I know, but I mean it's happening.
Yeah, they started it.
I will say I want one last thing on this.
Okay.
I wrote my Gaming Unplugged column for this week, and it came in as one of my shortest ever, just because the game is so simple.
Yeah.
It will be really hard for me to keep that word lit when it comes to writing for VLR. But I see that review will be coming soon.
Yeah,
very cool. All right, thank you, Ingersoll. And last but not least...
Yeah, let's have one game that people in North America will buy.
Yeah! Chris, number two. Roscoe, what you got for us, bud?
I'm sorry. I can be Chris whatever number. Chris Infinity. Yeah. So it should come as no surprise that I've spent the week playing Skylanders Giants. How many of you guys have picked that up at this point?
I have not picked up Giants because I am recuperating from the first game.
You have like what now, 6 copies of the first game now?
I only have 3 copies, but the 3DS game is a different game, and the 360 copy is sealed. I just have it. I'm not playing it again.
Okay.
It's just in my closet. I just have an unopened copy of Skylanders, like everybody does.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Anyway,
right under my
Giants... 3rd
copy of Sports Champions. It's fine. Don't worry.
So Giants is very similar to the first game. Gameplay mechanics are almost identical. The main difference is kind of the scale of characters, as denoted by the title Giants,
so
right?
Bigger.
So you're saying they're big?
They're bigger. Okay. They are 65% bigger.
Whoa,
that doesn't sound very giant.
Did you measure them?
No, I didn't. I just made that up. but I think it's more accurate when you just throw a statistic out there, like a real number.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's usually true 87% of the time. So yeah.
Yeah. There you go. See. Yeah. So anyway, so the scale of the characters is vastly different. You're going to run into enemies that are larger, but you've also got larger characters. Beyond that, they've got tons of new characters. They introduced this concept of light core characters, characters that kind of glow when you get them towards the portal. And I've been playing with it, and I can't quite figure out how it actually works. So props to the guys at Toys for Bob, you know, coming up with that technology. It's really, really kind of cool how it works. And so the giant characters also do it. So you kind of end up with these characters that sit on the portal and just kind of glow, which is really impressive. And so you the closer you get to the portal, the more it lights up as you bring them away. Kind of the lights dim. So.
You know what's lighting up? You know what's lighting up? It's your money.
Yeah. yes, definitely. So I did collect all of the characters from the first game. It took us a whopping 9 months to finally put a bow on that collection.
And now you get to do it all over again.
So I don't know that I'll be doing it over again. This. I think I had a reality check this week when I dropped $400 on figures that was probably not a wise thing to do, considering we're only like a third of the way through the available characters for this game. So,
I've been talking to Chris a little this week about the prices for the things. He doesn't seem too alarmed by that. But so the original figures, they started out at 7, but they ended up working their way up to 8, 9, 10, depending on where you bought them and
that
at
wasn't,
what
that
point
was individual,
in the popularity.
Right?
Right.
Not individual, those are packs of.
Right. So, those were the individual figures, and the packs were, I think, 20 in the first game. So now you can still get the new regular figures are still the 8 to 10, depending on where you find them, usually around 9.
Sure.
Then the light core ones are 11 or 12.
Yep.
The giants are 15.
Yep.
Wow.
And then instead of doing are they still doing 3 character packs? They seem to be mostly doing the like 2 characters and a random item for $25 thing.
So they've got right now they've got the Dragonfire It's I think that's or the Golden Cannon, whatever it's called. It's $25. It's I believe it's two characters in the random item. Toys R Us has your exclusive legendary 3-pack for $25.
Yep.
But yeah, so you can quickly see. I think there's 45 total characters in this game. There's 8 giants, 8 light core characters that are a mix of new characters plus your series 2 characters.
Yeah.
I think there's something like 8 new characters, maybe more. I'm not looking at the box. And then the rest of them are series 2 remakes, which is basically a character from the first game in a different pose with a higher level cap and different powers. So, you know, props to Activision for not just re-releasing all the same characters. Like, they actually did a little bit of innovation.
Like, here's a new paint job.
they kind of did, right? So I'm a little disappointed in that, but 45 characters, it's kind of overkill.
45
I'll
characters
honest.
At an and average can... of $12 a piece.
Yep. Yep.
And all of your old, to buy the game. All of your old ones are compatible with the new game, right?
Old characters yeah. work with the new game. Oh, cool. If it's a series 2 character or a re-release, they work on the old game, but basically none of the other ones work on the old game.
All right.
Just so you don't get any net ads. Nintendo. What was that, Sean?
I said just no one tell Nintendo about this.
Yeah, so I could see Graham with a box at his house with 600 Pokemon figures.
I would have
stacked
them too.
Up.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
But no one tell Nintendo. Especially with the whole new versions of them with new abilities.
Yeah, yeah. So Activision's definitely cashing in a little bit. I believe it's still the top grossing game for 2012. You know, we're a year in.
Yeah.
You know, so Giants came out almost a year out.
It feels like they're cashing in their chips. Like, this game is good and you should probably play it. I know you're going to play it a lot. It like seems like a good game, but like, it's that Activision cycle of, you know, build something up, make money, and then this is the point where I think this will be, like, I'm not sure if this is a better game than the first game, but I'm pretty sure that none of the games later will be as good as this game.
So I'll tell you this much. The Giants felt a lot shorter than the first game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a function of the fact that we spent more time playing it this week versus, you know, collecting the characters over a 9-month period, but we finished this game in 6 days. Whereas I think it took us several months to finish the first Skylanders. So it's really hard to gauge for me, you know, which game was actually longer. But having the game be complete, it's kind of like, okay, well, do we really need any more characters? Like, there's tons of new ones. I'll probably pick up all the new characters just because they're kind of cool. It's fun to switch them out and try the new abilities. But
you should play the 3DS game.
I have the 3DS game. I may have to do that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, considering how much those Giants cost, paying the like $170 to $200 for the 3DS is really a steal to be able to use those characters again.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Now the Giants are cool. They're really neat.
They're
just having that big kind of chunky character.
Now, you were talking about this in your preview. I guess you've had more time to do this now. Can you really fit 2 Giants in one portal?
You can, but it's kind of a balancing act. It definitely, I mean, the base of those giant characters is huge. So you kind of have to just squeeze them on there. It's definitely not as elegant as having 2 of the smaller characters. So I think there was a little bit of a miss on that on Activision's part. And the portal that comes with Giants, it's the same exact portal. If you buy the starter kit again, it's the same exact portal that you got with the first game.
Yeah.
So
well, if
they didn't,
if
make
you
it
get
bigger,
it on the platforms that weren't the 360, it's wired this time. They were wireless before, but
yeah. And so I have it on 360, so we were already wired.
But yeah, like it seems like they could have very easily just made it like wider. Like that probably didn't cost them that much to be like, well, it's just
tiny bit.
Yeah.
So, but it's a great game.
That's the next one.
yeah, definitely. It'll be
Skylanders wider.
Skylanders extra giants.
Okay.
Sure.
Anyway, it's a good game. Still enjoying it. Got some more stuff. But, you know, the completionist in me wants to go back and get all the tiny little things. We'll see if the luster of the game wears off.
It won't.
Now that we beat it.
They light up.
It's true. It's true.
We'll see if maybe they stop lighting up. Maybe they get dimmer. I don't know. That could happen. All right. But yeah, so games.
Games.
You know, let's move on. But it's interesting that this like 2 week period happened. You know, I get that we didn't talk about Medal of Honor Warfighter, and we're not ever going to talk about Medal of Honor Warfighter.
Oh, no. We did mention it a couple months ago.
Yeah, but
thoroughly made fun of the name then, and then we moved on.
Yeah, but like considering that there were some heavy hitters early in the month, and then, you know, we're about to hit November with some heavy, like, this is a strange period where it's like, I don't know, there are games.
Yeah, it's definitely weird, but I think next week we're gearing up for the actual
right.
onslaught of.
I guess today.
Today, as of today. Yeah.
Assassin's Creed 3 and Need for Speed Most Wanted, and yeah, there's a lot of stuff coming out. Anyway, so, but yeah, let's
go on
to our topic. What's our topic?
Our topic this week is. We're speaking of Skylanders Giants, we're going to be focusing on kids' games that are also great for adults.
So Pokemon?
Yes, sure. Okay.
Pokemon's one of them.
But I think Skylanders and Skylanders Giants have kind of taken everyone by surprise because a lot of people, you know, they may have expected a decent, maybe kind of okay game for kids, but I think a lot of adults are really into it as well, and I think it's kind of the perfect excuse of if you have kids, you can continue to support this hobby. It's like, oh yeah,
games where you can get away with buying them because you have kids.
Exactly.
But before we continue, I should say that we're probably not going to talk about, you know, what I'd call the, you know, Pixar game, basically like anything Nintendo releases and stuff like that, like games that are for everybody.
These
are specifically for like games that really aren't for adults, but they kind of are for adults. And what made me think about this was with the original Skylanders. If you registered your account online, I just wanted to see what they did. You know, I had some, you know, I had some characters, and I was like, you know what? I wonder what these characters do online. And if you register for an account on the website where they have the web game, it asks for your parents' email.
Oh.
And then it's
Graham, did you get your mom's permission to get online?
So you put in the email and it's like, your child wants to play Skylanders. And it makes you feel a little strange, but you know what? Like, well, first of all, that web game, don't play it. It's dumb. But it's just one of those things where it's like, so I wanted to play Skylanders and now you're making me feel really bad for one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it seems like there are a lot of games like that. Earlier this year, I got on clearance. I picked up Disney Universe and, I know Rasker reviewed that for us earlier in the year, but it kind of feels a little bit like a 4-player Lego kind of experience, but crazier. Like it doesn't have that like second layer of, oh yeah, I remember that thing from the movie, or it's just you need to lay off the sugar was that game.
Yeah, the Lego games may be the most perfect example of this type of thing, I think. Where the difficulty level is non-existent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just easy to plow through, and it's just dumb fun. Yeah. And it's like you let the kids do whatever they're going to do in there, you know, whatever. But there's enough game in there, especially when it gets to like finding all the secrets, that the adults can come in and really dig into it.
Yeah.
And much more so than Pokemon, honestly, because I will stand. I mean, it can be a kid's game, but the amount of work you have to do in that game, if you want to be even remotely competitive, is something I don't think any child could possibly do.
It's hard, right? Because if you want to make games specifically for kids, in a sense, you don't want to use that phrase, but you have to kind of dumb it down a little bit, just because it's very it can be quite intimidating for a kid to learn, you know, something like a game. But to make a game that's fun for both kids and adults, I would say is even harder to do than make a movie that's enjoyable for both.
Then you only need 2 hours, or not, probably only 90 minutes usually at best.
Yeah.
I don't care what you guys are saying about 6-hour action games. If you hand me a 90-minute video game, I'm going to throw it at somebody.
So what you're saying is we shouldn't tell you about the unfinished one.
About what?
You cannot throw that unless you are just throwing the actual PS3.
This is true.
Yeah.
For download games, the virtual download content that, or download games, that's fine. I mean, they can be whatever they want for charging $6-$10. But when you charge me 20 or more, church and I have to lug around, I would expect at least that many hours out of a game.
But you know, one game that I think started off life as trying to be like a game for everyone, but certainly got marketed as a kid's game and kind of took off from there in that direction, Viva Pinata.
Oh yeah,
that game pretty good.
Yeah, both of those games pretty good. Well, I mean, there's the Mario Party style game. I think.
Yeah,
I played it.
And there was the DS game.
There was a DS game?
Yeah.
What?
Wait, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
The Microsoft published thing.
Yeah.
What?
What? Microsoft doesn't have a handheld.
I can't keep going, guys. Please stop.
Take a breath.
What?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I don't know if anyone was paying attention, but there were a lot of Microsoft properties on the DS.
I mean, yeah, kind of. And the GBA, if you want to go back to, like...
Yeah. But there were, like, some great Age of Empires games and that thing. Yeah. Like, anyway. There wasn't Halo DS, even though everybody kept saying there was Halo DS.
Oh, yeah. That would have been
there
weird.
Was footage of that game, which is weird. Anyway.
Yeah. It was called Metroid Prime Hunters.
Yeah.
We don't talk about that game.
Long and storied. Okay. Anyway.
That game hurt my hands.
That game hurt my brain.
Any first-person shooting game on DS should never have happened. I played Dementium. And I'm sure Dementium 2 may have been a little better, but this system's not for it.
Yeah.
But moving on, keep to our topic.
You know, kids' games that are fine
for adults. First-person shooters.
They're probably... Wait, is there one of those?
I doubt that highly. I would hope not, honestly. If we can wean the next generation off that.
Yeah, I don't know. But... you can go back and find some really interesting games that were clearly for kids, but were super fun for adults. Like Pokemon Snap. That game was great.
Pokemon
for
Snap
like
was
7
fun.
Minutes.
Pokemon Snap was okay.
Because that's how long it took you to finish.
Yeah, Pokemon Snap was alright.
Wait, didn't you go back and try and get all the best pictures?
I got all the best pictures.
Screw Professor Oak.
I'm good. I'm good at photography. I don't know.
Professor Oak.
Graham, you're good
at
photography and games.
Well, I'm good at photography.
Pokemon Snap was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, what is your favorite?
My favorite
game that is kind of for kids, but you played anyway.
Oh man, I guess if we're gonna count Viva Pinata, I think the first Viva Pinata was kind of awesome because it was a rare.
That game had a cartoon show, so I figured that qualifies.
Okay.
True. I mean, if we want to get into cartoons, we can talk about Kirby, but I don't know. I mean, Kirby's Epic Yarn. You know, I think that game is definitely...
You know what? Kirby's Epic Yarn is the Kirby that's made for little kids.
Yes.
Because the narration is seriously... It's a Nick Jr. show narration.
That was the game I was going to mention. I played that with my girlfriend, and it was enjoyable. I mean, you could appreciate that it's super cheesy and obviously super meant for kids, but it was fun.
I loved everything about that game.
Yeah.
That game makes me happy thinking about it. So
I like
the
narrator when he's just like, Kirby wanted a cupcake. I'm like, I want a cupcake too.
And Prince Fluff. Like, Prince
Fluff. That's right.
He did it. Yeah. He got magic yarn. Anyway, I'm going to change my answer to Kirby's Epic Yarn because that game is a lot of fun. You can even play solo without kids. But I guess if you have kids, it might be more fun. But it's probably, you know, I know Return to Dreamland might be the better game, but I actually really like Epic Yarn a little more. Maybe
you know what? I think Epic Yarn is the better game.
Yeah, I mean, Return to Dreamland is fine. I mean, it's just more Kirby.
Yeah, it's iterative. It tries a lot of interesting things. It does some like I love the multiplayer part of it. But you know, as far as like, but yeah,
I think I love Kirby most when it does something different, like every game. Canvas Curse with Mass Attack and now with Epic Yarn.
So what you're saying is you don't like Dreamland 2, Dreamland 3, and Return. You like all of the other ones.
Yeah.
No, Squeak Squad. I think you hate Squeak Squad.
I've never played Squeak Squad.
There
Squad.
You go.
Squeak Squad yet, but anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, Epic Yarn, really, really good game, and I would love to see another Epic Yarn game or something that's kind of puts Kirby into a different like kind of aesthetic.
Yeah.
Gives them like, some different abilities. That'd be neat, but. Who knows?
Yeah. We'll see.
Yes. Viva Pinata, also a great game, though.
Yeah.
Is it weird for us? Like, let's say we do hear about a game that's, like, really good, like, shockingly good, but its primary target is kids. Is it hard for us as sort of guys in their mid-20s, 30s, 40s, whatever,
to go into
a store and buy it?
I'll walk out. I'll buy it.
It took me a few months to get Skylanders. I'll say.
I'll just be like, hey, I want that kid's game. Take it. Give it up. Take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think at this point we really need to justify it. I could see me maybe being a little uncomfortable, but I mean, if it's a good game, it's a good game.
I was going to say, see, that's what makes a difference. You can't just go in and pick up, like, brats.
you just can't.
We're talking about
it's a good game.
Yeah. But I mean, I would be more embarrassed by buying something like Catherine in a store than I would be buying like, Skylanders or something, because it's like
that's true.
I don't know. But, or any kind of game that involves anime boobs, you know, just I don't know.
So it, every Japanese game.
Every Japanese game, yes.
Ever.
Except Kirby.
Except, my wife and I bought a lot of DVDs that are animated for one thing or another, and some of them are cartoons and some of them are like mature anime. So like we must be on some sort of list. Like we go and like buy Lady of the Tramp and like Little Shop of Horrors, and like it's like in the same. No, bring them all up.
Little did you know, I actually bought Skylanders and Catherine at the same time. That guy gave a really weird look when I.
But I think it's interesting when you know there are developers that are clearly talented. But because of how the industry works, there's like, if you start a game developer, chances are you're going to start doing like the handheld version of a licensed game.
You can
break through. And I think a pretty good example of that was Drawn to Life, which was definitely a kid's game.
Yes.
That game was fun.
I never played.
It's hard to go back to it after Scribblenauts. Like, well, just do anything. Why am I drawing the shape of this platform?
Would you guys say that it's harder now to identify sort of games that are made for kids comparing to like games when we sort of the ones that we grew playing or that we played growing up? Like for Nintendo, for example, I'm thinking about all the NES games that I loved, like Mega Man's and even licensed games from Capcom like Darkwing Duck and things like that. I mean those at the time were made for games, were made for kids, sorry. But now those kinds of games, A, don't really get made that much. But B, if a game like that came out, like let's say Mega Man 10, for example, like one of the new, quote-unquote, retro games, which is fantastic, you can't really say that's made for kids today.
Well, yeah.
I think you can
certainly it was.
Certainly it's made for people who played the old Mega Man games, but I would argue that Mega Man was never like a kid series. I think the line was made a lot clearer in the 16-bit generation. Good games that were kids games that we can talk about now, like for example, like Castle of Illusion, clearly kids game, sure, Mickey Mouse. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's not like dude with a gun on his arm. That's pretty cool.
That would be an entirely different Castle of Illusion.
Yeah, like Mega Man's like a cool like robot guy with bullets. So like it's not quite like a kids game.
But if you think about it, all
Kirby
all games,
pretty much all of Kirby, all of it.
True.
Anyway.
But if you think about it, all games on the NES were kind of kids' games. I mean, like they were like kids were like you could argue for some.
That's
games.
That's the question I'm asking. Were they?
I would say so because I think I'm not saying that adults couldn't play them. Of course they could, and I'm sure a lot of them did. I mean, I grew up with my dad playing games, but I mean, I don't.
You grew
I
up was, with I, your dad playing games.
Yes.
You didn't get to play any of them. It was just your dad.
it was really sad. He just made me watch the games. I couldn't play them. Sometimes I got to press the button, and that was cool. but it's just like I would say like even like you know just the popular stuff like Mario and Zelda and I don't know I just well I think of that as kind of the days for young kids to play games and I mean these days we have everyone who plays all kinds of games so we need that kind of defining line what is and what isn't a kid's game but back then
more differentiated yeah for sure
yeah I think it comes from I think a lot of, I mean, I say the 16-bit generation, but basically it's the pre-ESRB craziness and then the post-ESRB craziness. The games.
Yeah, that's a really good dividing line. Yeah.
Games target an E or don't target an E.
Yeah, exactly.
And, then there's just the, beyond that, there's the, oh, are we going to tie this into a television show or toy line?
Yeah.
Right.
Though you can tie something into a toy line and then make it not for kids. Mm-hmm. Like Transformers games.
Transformers.
Yeah.
I'm playing that right now, actually, the Fall of Cybertron, the first one. I haven't played it yet, and I was thinking, like, this game is, if you showed a kid from the 80s growing up watching the cartoon, this game, their head would explode. They would not be able to handle how cool it looks, especially. But, yeah, but, I mean, it, again, the content and the, I mean, it's not, you'd never call that a kid's game.
Yeah.
No, definitely not. Yeah. I mean, but again, I think we're just going to speak on that series specifically. I think that's, again, going back to the Mega Man thing, that's marketed towards an audience who grew up with those games, not kids who watch.
the kids that are aimed at the kids of 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think we have that Transformers Prime game that's coming out for the Wii U. I think that might be more towards a younger audience because that's based on
the current.
Based on the cartoon, yeah.
So
I still feel like a kid all the time, so maybe that's why I don't have too much problem playing these games that are... Maybe, you know, I mean, again, it doesn't matter. To me, it doesn't matter if it's a good game, it's a good game. If it's a genre I'm not used to, or maybe if it's catered to teenagers or even young kids, I mean, if it's good, you know, I'll play it anyway.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think one thing I just want to bring up, I think this whole game is for kids thing can be used in a negative way. I think of when Tony Hawk Shred was coming out, the last Tony Hawk game before HD, the one that used the stupid Tony Hawk ride board, they were saying, oh, well, this one's for kids. So, you know, if they don't like it, then, they're just dumb kids. It's like using this is for kids as an excuse to make something stupid.
But we certainly don't want to go in the other direction and use this is for kids as a blanket statement to avoid things that are good.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the Wii in its entirety.
I was gonna say, as a lifelong Nintendo consumer, I've just dealt with it for about 30 years now. So.
Yeah, good stuff.
The GameCube was purple and had a handle.
Not mine. Well, I had a handle, but it wasn't purple.
Handle, look, that handle is useful. I don't want you guys to talk.
Times.
It was useful.
You can move it to other places.
If only all the other consoles had that. How am I supposed to move my 360? I don't have a handle.
It's seriously.
I mean, that's a big design flaw. Nintendo had it right. Nobody listened to them.
Yeah.
Well, that's a feature for the Ouya. That thing is practically pocket-sized.
You probably can't put that in your pocket, yeah.
I want, like, a company to release, like, plastic accessories that are handles to hook on to all the systems. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Like I said, we had that, but it was on the remotes. You could make it look like a tennis racket or a golf club, and why would you waste more? That's the kind of like kiddie type thing that you
for kids,
right?
Yeah, Link's crossbow training.
That.
So you shouldn't be training kids with crossbows.
Is that for kids?
That doesn't seem like a plan. I mean,
if you like Chris said, if you want to actually train someone with a crossbow, then there you go. I mean, it's not Link's potty training, so it's... That's an entirely different game. Does not use the zapper.
Man, if that's not a sign to end this podcast, I don't know what is.
All right. For Henry, Chris, Sean, and Andrew, I'm Graham. See you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to the Snack Bar Games podcast. Follow us on the web at snackbar-games.com or on Twitter @snackbargames.